Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 307 of Geek Town Radio. I'm back this week with... Matt, how are you doing?
I'm very good, David. How are you?
I'm good. I am a little bit sleep deprived for reasons I won't go into, but I'm a little bit sleep deprived today. So I apologise if I stumble over things, but we're here and we're going to do the show. So what have you been doing and playing and watching over the last few weeks?
Well, I did a stream on, what day was it? Thursday or Friday, something like that, earlier this week for Psychonauts, which you can go and buy on the Xbox One. It's actually an Xbox original game. It boots up with the original Xbox intro thing, which is quite a nice little touch as well. I miss game startup things as well. They're you know, you think of like the PS1 intro, that kind of stuff. Consoles now just give you a logo and then you're into the login screen, which I get is for like time purposes. It's just a nice little touch anyway. So but yeah, it's interesting because I've been consuming two things that are kind of X-Men-ish, because this is kind of like a bunch of kids get sent to a camp and they're all kind of psychonauts. They've all got these little abilities and stuff, and there's this like war veteran sort of colonel guy there who looks like he's the shape of a sort of potato in a way. His job is, okay, I've been sent all these kids, I'm going to teach them, you know, how to use their powers and stuff. He's not really similar to like Professor X, where he'll actually take care of the students or the kids.
Yeah,
he's very much sort of, you're gonna do this or you're gonna die.
Yes,
there's even a line that he gives, I think in the first obstacle course, it's like, you got to keep moving until you're like dead or whatever. So that's the kind of attitude that he's sort of got. And there's even a few instances where I think a couple of like kids that don't have names or whatever get killed and he just kind of moves along with things. The strange thing about that though is all of these kids apart from one have got like their parents' consent, like they've actually sent them off to this summer camp-esque sort of thing.
Yeah.
And there's even this one of the kids at the start, he's like, I thought this was a summer camp, and he starts like getting a bit mad about it.
Yeah.
But you play as Raz, he's the kind of main one, he's got these little goggles and stuff. The colonel realizes he's kind of like special. The game's also got Nikki Rapp, who I am good friends with as well.
I hadn't noticed barely. That. Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, she voices a character called Lily, which is funny because in Telltale's Walking Dead, she also voices a character called Lily. Met her 2 years ago at Walker Stalker, when Walker Stalker was a thing. But I talked to her now and again, just ask how she is and that kind of stuff. And I told her I was playing the game and stuff, which was cool. And as I got to like some of her lines, I'm trying to sort of listen for her voice and stuff. I can't remember what the release. I think it was like 2006 or something.
2005 it was.
2005, right. So even in that situation, her voice that I know now is going to sound different to then, because, you know, everybody would have sounded different 10 years ago. So I could sort of hear bits of her voice in that character. A fairly big character for Nikki to be voicing. And I'm pretty sure that she's in the upcoming Psychonauts 2 as well.
Yeah.
Which is coming out. It's coming out this month on the 25th. So I want to kind of finish this one before I jump into that one, which is going to be a bit of a difference going from a 2005 Xbox game to a 2021 sequel. Is going to be interesting. I don't know what it was that took the sequel so long, because that's like a couple of generations you're skipping, but I don't know. But the company called Double Fine that makes the game is now owned by Microsoft. I was talking to her about that before as well. So it's a good game. It's one of the things that people sold me on was, hey, it's a little bit Crash Bandicoot-esque.
Mm,
and
yes.
It's a little bit like that, obviously.
Yeah.
a bit of different stuff. Got like a similar type of platforming gameplay, but it's quite good. I've only kind of done the first hour or so, basically like a couple of obstacle courses, pretty good. But there's probably some interesting lore to discover about this world as well, because there's something very kind of like strange about it. And I do have a little theory as to what's going on, but I'll see if that kind of comes out.
Yeah.
Have you played this?
I have. I actually love this game so much that I didn't pick it up when it first came out. I picked it up in a Steam sale a few years after it came out. When I finished it, I actually wrote to Double Fine, the company behind it, and said, I love this game so much, I kind of feel guilty that I bought it at a sale. I really feel like I should have paid full price for it, because I absolutely adored this game. One of the writers of it is Tim Schafer. And if you know your gaming history, Tim Schafer is one of the LucasArts original people. He was assistant designer on the Monkey Island games. And he's also responsible for the really hugely critically acclaimed things like Full Throttle, Grim Fandango, and Day of the Tentacle as well. He's been behind a lot of those early sort of point and click adventure games. And Psychonauts is very different to that, because it's not, it's more of a platformer than it is a sort of point and click thing. But it's got that same sort of weird humor and sensibility to it. So it's very off the wall and odd. And it's got this bizarre dream sequence-y sort of stuff in it, because the entire thing is about stuff that's sort of going on in people's minds. I think it's the Milkman level has a sort of certain notoriety to it when you eventually get to that, because that's truly bizarre. There's all sorts of very, very weird things going on. The characterizations are superb. Raz is a really interesting lead character. I love the setup of it. As you say, it's this kind of summer camp run by the squad commander guy from Full Metal Jacket, essentially, for people that know that reference. That's the sort of guy that he is. It's got a superb voice cast to it. It's weird and wonderful. I know the sequel, like you say, is coming out later this month. I'm very tempted to go through and play through the first game again, because it has been so long since I played through it. I absolutely adore this game. If you've never played Psychonauts, it's well, well worth picking up. It's a really fun platformer. I'm not sure how it replays at this point in terms of the platforming mechanics and stuff, but I absolutely loved it, and it's worth playing through just for the story, if nothing else.
I mean, in terms of like how dated it is, it's pretty good. It's better than some games made today.
Yeah.
Like in terms of controls and stuff. And I'm not really a big sort of, hey, I need my games to look pretty. It's not got like the greatest graphics and stuff, but it's got like, I get this real sense of mystery with it as well. Like obviously I haven't seen like all the story and everything, but the gameplay, yeah, it's pretty good. I didn't really have too many, I mean, there was some pretty difficult obstacle course stuff that I went through. And apart from me messing up myself, admittedly, with like certain bits of climbing, I wasn't really sort of moaning about the controls or anything. I was getting on with them pretty good. So I don't think it's like a port version that you can play. Like the backwards compatibility thing on Xbox One. So it's not been remastered or anything. I think it's just a port of those games. But yeah, I don't think you can get it at all on PlayStation, and you won't be able to now anyway, because the company's owned by Microsoft. If you've got an Xbox, if you've got an original Xbox, you can get it on those. I'm not sure about Xbox 360, how it would work there, but if you've got an Xbox One, you can just buy it off the store. So which is what I did. But yeah, very good with that. The other thing, which is kind of X-Men-esque as well, but with older characters, is the Nevers, which I've been watching on Sky. It was strange because last week or so, I went to see if it was still on there, and it said expiring in 2 days, and it had the 6 episodes on there. And I thought, oh, I'm not going to get through these episodes in 2 days. I'll wait for like another opportunity. And then a couple of days ago, I thought, oh, I was kind of in the mood to watch it, and I kept meaning to watch it. And it was just back on Sky, and it didn't have any expiration date.
Oh.
It's kind of strange the way I've noticed some weird things of how that works sometimes. I've actually noticed shows before on Sky, it'll say, hey, expiring in 1 day, and then it'll be there the next day still. So a bit strange. But very good show. It's kind of these women, and they're all referred to as the Touched, which is a weird kind of phrase to use. It almost should be called the Touched, because they bring that word up so often.
Yeah.
It's about them kind of discovering powers and all that kind of stuff, and they're sort of running away from this group of people that are after them. I like the little warehouse they've got as well that they end up in. Got all these kind of like cool little gadgets and stuff, which is quite good. I was quite impressed with the first episode. I was a little bit off with the second episode. I think with the second episode, they kind of threw even more little characters at me.
There are a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose it's a case of juggling, okay, who's not important and who is. Obviously, the main women are the most important ones. The strange feeling I got from the first one was I went in knowing it was like written or whatever by Joss Whedon. And then as I was watching the pilot episode, which I think is a little bit longer, I'd forgotten it was written by Joss Whedon. It didn't feel to me like something from him. And then when obviously the episode finished and it popped up credits, you know, directed, written, created by him, and I was like, oh yeah, he's involved with this. So it just felt a little bit, I mean, I haven't seen like all of Buffy or whatever. Obviously, that's going to be a big comparison point. I've seen some of Buffy. Didn't quite, at least to me, it didn't quite feel like that. And even with things like maybe Justice League or Avengers, I'm just thinking of other things that he's done, or even Firefly, didn't really feel, it just didn't quite feel like the same thing from him. And I almost kind of forgot it was made by him. How did you kind of feel when you were watching it?
It is one of those things, because it was about to be launched just as all the Joss Whedon controversy stuff kicked off. He now is no longer involved with the show. He still will always forever be on it as the creator of it, because it was his original idea. But after the first few episodes, he actually ended up stepping away from it. And whether that was because of the on-set stuff, I mean, he said he stepped away from it because of exhaustion, but I mean, who knows? He did direct and write the first episode, so that was done entirely by Josh. He then directed a couple more episodes. The person that has really taken the reins on it is Jane Espenson, who is also a Buffy Angel writer, was somebody that was heavily involved in those shows and has very much the same sensibility, and I love her writing. So I think you've got to kind of look past the fact that it was Josh that created it in the first place and just decide if you're okay with that. As I think we said when it first came out, it's unfair to throw the entire show away and scream for its cancellation. Joss, yes, the guy may be an a-hole, but there's
other people working on the show.
Hundreds of people working. Yeah, there are hundreds of people working on that show. It's unfair to completely kill all their stuff and drag that down with them. So in terms of what you were saying about, the second episode, there is an issue for me in that there are 15 main cast that show. There is way, way too many people, I think. It's very difficult to manage that many people in a main cast. Plus, there's another sort of 10 recurring cast members. So it's a ridiculously huge cast. And I kind of feel like that could do with being pared down a little bit.
You don't want to turn into Titans.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Which is a prime example for that.
Yes, way too many people. The first season is 12 episodes. They've only released 6 so far. The next 6 are going out in 2022. We've then got to see whether they decide to renew it or not. I did enjoy the first 6 episodes of it. I thought it was an interesting sort of take on this kind of Victorian X-Men setup. Then you get to the 6th episode in that run and it takes this like sharp bright turn into something else. And that's very interesting. And it's sort of thing that Joss has done on things like Dollhouse as well. It is very much a sort of trademark of his sort of stuff. And it takes this odd, strange turn in that final, 6th episode of the run. I'm intrigued to see what they do with the next 6 episodes. I want to see where that heads, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of it. So
cool. Yeah, the other thing was Warrior Nun, which I finished the first season for, I think it was 10 episodes, which has got another season on the way. I really, really enjoyed that. This kind of fun mix of, I don't know, a bunch of different themes. You've got like some medieval type-ish stuff going on. You've got like, obviously, there's the nun side of things, which I didn't think I'd particularly care too much for, but when you mix in that with the other elements of the show, it really works quite well. It's sort of like these badass nuns that can fight really well and this kind of stuff. It's a good kind of mixture. I really like the main character. She's quite interesting and quite cool. I found the whole just the way that the Halo thing works in the show really quite cool and looks quite painful, but because it's kind of like screwed into someone's back, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like they use this mechanical thing and it's like, yeah.
Yeah, essentially the setup for Warrior Nun, it is based on a comic book, although it's incredibly different to the comic book. It sort of vaguely uses the comic book as a background, but expands it in a really interesting way for a TV show. It's from Simon Barry, who's the guy that did things like Continuum, and he's done another number of other shows, but I really like his work. And the essential setup for it is this 19-year-old girl that ends up dying. She's actually she starts off as a quadriplegic orphan. I think she actually kills herself and then ends up in this morgue. But there is this holy order and they're trying to hide this ancient device which is being protected by this holy order, and the nun that's in charge of protecting it is trying to hide it and embeds it in this girl's body, and she stops being dead and wakes up in this morgue and finds that she has these sort of superpowers because she's got this, is very confused and suddenly can walk and is no longer a quadriplegic, and suddenly finds that she's now has these superpowers. So the order then wants to sort of control her and she's not into the whole thing, and it's just really, really well put together. Really enjoyed the first season of it, and I'm glad that they've renewed it for a second season, because it's never a certainty when it's this sort of Netflix show.
Not anymore, no.
Alba Baptista, who plays Ava, the lead character, is brilliant, and she's wonderfully sarcastic and just plays that role beautifully. It's really well put together. I very much enjoyed that first season of it, so I'm looking forward to that coming back.
Yeah, it's got a really good story. It's got really interesting kind of characters, and there's this kind of like war thing going on. Then there's this big kind of monster thing that comes in.
Yeah.
And then there's, of course, like the Halo stuff itself, which is really cool. And the action's really, really good well. Like a few of the characters have got shotguns and swords and all this other kind of stuff. And it's really quite cool. I really, really enjoyed that. The episodes are quite short as well. They're about 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And even towards the end of the first season, as things get a little bit more complicated and more kind of characters get introduced, I didn't quite feel like it got too hard to sort of follow. It was still managed all that pretty well. And it doesn't have too many main characters to follow, which is a good thing.
Yeah, there's a core group of like four or five of them, and I think it covers them very, very well. I do think that has been a problem with, like you say, shows like Titans and The Nevers. They have way too many characters to be able to just focus on, and you need to pare that down. I think four or five is about the most you need out of a main core group.
Yeah,
it gets a bit unwieldy after that.
Yeah, that's going to get worse with Titans season 3, but we'll talk about that another time.
Yeah.
What have you been up to?
I'm still working my way through Clone Wars. I am up to season 7, which is the final season. I've actually done the first 3 episodes, which is quite nice, because the first 3 episodes are the Bad Batch episodes, where they first introduce this group of defective clones called the Bad Batch, which of course is the continuation show that they've done, because there is Clone Wars, then there was Rebels, and now we've got the Bad Batch that sort of work as a group of shows together. And the first 3 episodes of season 7 really introduced the Bad Batch as a bunch of characters. So I've now seen those episodes, which I hadn't seen before, and I'd already started watching the Bad Batch. So that was quite nice to see. I've been told the last few episodes of season 7 are really kind of amazing. So I'm looking forward to watching the rest of those. I think there's 12 episodes in the final season. So it's been great just going through that. And I like the fact that it's a show which starts off very episodic of like, you know, here's a little snippets of things that happened during the Clone Wars. And then as you get further into it, they put in longer and longer story arcs. So you end up with stories that go over 3 or 4 episodes. So you're almost like little mini movies because they run straight into each other. You know, it's really well written. It gives a lovely background texture to that whole part of the Star Wars universe and introduces a bunch of interesting characters, some of which we've seen pop up in live action, of course. I'm really, really enjoying that. And I'm probably going to get to the end of that this week, because I think, like I say, there's 12 episodes in the final season. So I should get through that this week, I think.
The one thing I really liked about Clone Wars, I mean, I need to go back to watching it, but I've been watching Bad Batch as well, is the dynamic between Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Ahsoka, how their roles kind of fit in this kind of triangle.
Yeah.
Because Obi-Wan's supposed to be like, you know, the wise one or whatever. Ahsoka's kind of the new one that's getting trained. I think that's called Padawan, isn't it? And then Anakin sort of sometimes doesn't do that properly and gets called out by Obi-Wan, and then Ahsoka's kind of in the middle of that. So
yeah.
I always thought that was quite interesting. Of course, that's all before, you know, the Darth Vader stuff, and we know what becomes of that. So it's interesting to see Anakin like that as well.
Yeah.
Like still kind of having that attitude, but leading up to that, but then having responsibilities, I suppose.
Yeah, so it really does flesh out those characters a lot, and particularly the relationship between Anakin and Obi-Wan. And there's even a reveal that never really comes across in the films, that Obi everyone clearly knew about the relationship between Anakin and Padme. And that isn't really made particularly clear in the movies, that Obi-Wan knew what was going on and chose to ignore it. And that's made much more apparent in the Clone Wars series. He was aware there was a relationship going on and chose not to kind of step in and stop him. So there is a lot of sort of interesting things that come out of that series. So it is superb, that Clone Wars series. It's well, well worth watching if you're a Star Wars fan. I'm sure if you are a Star Wars fan, you probably watched through it already. I know I'm very late to it. I'd seen odd episodes here and there, but because of where it used to air in the UK, it's never been in like one entire place together. So the fact that it's on Disney Plus has allowed me to go right through it, which has been brilliant.
Knowing where Obi-Wan and Anakin end up, especially with that like lava fight and everything in the third film, and seeing some of them conversations and knowing that's going to that point is quite interesting.
So I am very intrigued to see where it ends at the end of season seven, where they actually stop it. But it's superb, really, really good, and just gets better and better with each season. One of the other things I've been watching, a couple of kind of documentary things, but they're different kind of geeky documentary things. One of them was called The History of Comedy, which I mean, as you would probably understand from the title, it is pretty much a run through various types of comedy with each episode. So they do a thing which is on blue humor and censorship, and it talks a lot about people like Lenny Bruce and George Carlin and that sort of stuff, and runs through a background of them. Then there's a thing on parody and talks to people like Weird Al Yankovic and that sort of stuff. Then they do stuff on sitcoms and the different types of sitcoms and observational humor. It's just a really interesting, if you're into sort of comedy and stand-up comedy, it's very interesting just to see them talk to various different people that have been involved in sort of stand-up and doing those sort of sitcom shows. And that's available on Now TV and Sky Documentaries, I think, run it. I think there's two seasons of it, but it's well worth watching. It's a really interesting thing if you're into your comedy. Quite good. One of the other things I've been watching again is another history of series, Secret History of Comics. It's actually, I think, Robert Kirkman's Secret History of Comics. I think he's the producer on it. That is fascinating. The opening episode does Marvel and talks about the whole history of Marvel, obviously Stan Lee's involvement in just building that company. And I mean, I know Stan Lee was heavily involved in it. I hadn't realized he'd basically been there literally from the start of, well, prior to it becoming Marvel Comics, and was basically the person behind it, and literally was the office boy when it started and everybody else left. And he was given, basically said, oh, well, there's nobody else to do it, so here you are, you become editor for it. And this is essentially what happened.
I've read some stories about that. It's pretty incredible, that Stan Lee journey.
Yeah, just immense. And it doesn't pull any punches. You know, there were points where they invented new ways of writing and developing comics, where Stan would come in and give like an outline of the comic book to the artist, and the artist essentially would draw the panels, and then Stan would go in and put the words on afterwards. So there was never like a full script for it, because that way they got to do it a lot quicker, because Stan just couldn't keep up with writing all the books. So he'd say, here's the outline for the story, hand it over to the artist. The artist would then draw a bunch of panels for it. He'd then come back and fit the words into what the artist had drawn. And this became one of the things which became quite tenuous, because Stan was getting all the credit for, oh, how great these things are written. And you can argue that the artist actually had a major amount of control in terms of what the story actually was, because essentially they were developing where the story went with their drawings and didn't really get enough credit for that. So it doesn't always paint Stan in the best light, but it handles it very sensitively and does it very well. You know, I mean, it doesn't paint anybody as a complete villain. It's just, this is what happened. So I find that quite interesting. There's only a couple of episodes gone out in the UK at the moment. First episode on Marvel, second episode on Wonder Woman, which is really fascinating. We're a family-friendly show, so I'm not going to go into exactly the setup of the creation writer of Wonder Woman, but it was a guy and two women that were very much the people that were responsible for creating Wonder Woman and had a very interesting relationship between the three of them. That is a really fascinating background to how that comic book came about and the type of stuff that was in those early comic books. I mean, it is what it says. It is a secret history of comic books. There is a whole bunch of things in there that I really didn't know about how certain characters were created. So if you're into your comic books, that is well worth watching. I think, again, that's certainly on Sky. I think it's Sky Documentaries that are running it over. Oh, sorry, Sky History that are running it over here. That's well worth watching as well. And Outer Banks returned for its second season. I'm a couple of episodes into that. I said before, I think I enjoy this show way, way more than I probably should. And because it's not really aimed at me. It's very much a sort of teen drama. It ended the first season with a couple of the characters being presumed dead. They, of course, aren't, as that's not giving anything away because they pretty much said that in the trailer. So it's following those characters as they land in NASA and they're still on the hunt for this gold, which they were looking for in the first season. It's just this wonderful, fun adventure series of these group of teenage kids, but you've now got a couple of them in Jamaica and you've got the rest of the gang that are still in the Outer Banks and dealing with trying to clear the names of the two that have gone on the run. Only a couple of episodes into that, but I am really enjoying it. I think it's wonderfully, wonderful fun. From a few headlines I've seen, I think the second season ends on a bit of a sort of bombshell, so I hope it gets renewed for a first season. It isn't one of those that Netflix leaves just kind of high and dry, but we'll see. Did you end up watching any of that?
Funny enough, I watched the trailer yesterday for the first season. The trailer didn't really like pull me in massively, and I do have like other things to watch, but I might go to it eventually. But I then again, like outside of my thoughts on the trailer and stuff, I've just heard endlessly good things about it, so it might be better than I'm anticipating, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that is very much the case. It is a show that I think punches way above what you think its weight should be. It's way better put together than it looks like it should be on the surface. And they've got some very interesting things. The first season particularly shot very interestingly. We talked to, I think we talked to the DP for it, and they talked about how they use drones in a really unique way in the way that they shot it. The music's fantastic. It's of course Phil Eisler doing the music for it. So it's just really well put together. Really, really well put together. Really nicely shot. It's this wonderful teen drama adventure series thing. I've said it's like remade The Goonies with teenagers as a sort of cast of the CW as the stars of it. It's just really, really good and fun. And I love that show. It's really entertaining. So season two just carries that on so, so well. That's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We start off the TV and film news with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. And once again, for the second week in a row, no cancellations at all, which is great news. Really, really good news. We talked a bit about some shows that got shut down last week by COVID. So sort of temporary halted shows. The only one I've seen this week is The Midwich Cuckoos, which is the Sky drama starring Keely Hawes. That got a positive COVID test, so that's been shut down for a few days. Apart from that, no cancellations or anything like that this week. So renewals, one just popped up today. The Chi has been renewed for a fifth season, so that will be coming back. Love, Victor has been renewed for a third season, which I don't think comes as a great surprise because that seems to have gone down incredibly well.
It's such a good show. Yeah. It really is. And it just pulls at you with emotions.
I haven't actually managed to get around to watching any of it yet, but I know you and Gray say it's superb. So that is, of course, goes out on Star on Disney Plus over here, Hulu in the US. So that's back for a third season. Snowpiercer has landed a fourth season renewal just as they've wrapped the filming on the third season, which is a pretty quick turnaround. Although they did the same thing last year. They wrapped the second season and gave it a third season straight away before it had even aired. So, I mean, it's not out of character for them. And it's great that they're sticking with the show that much. That's TNT that air it in the US. And then, of course, it airs on Netflix over here. So I'm very happy that they've put their weight behind it. And that is definitely coming back. And they've given it early renewals. So that's good news. Sweet Tooth has been renewed for a second season as well, which I was a little nervous about because it looked like it was probably quite expensive to make that show, and it's Netflix and you never know. But a few weeks before or a week before, they had actually announced some of the numbers for it, and the numbers have been really good. And it's unlike Netflix to announce numbers for a show and then cancel it the next week. So I was quite hopeful when they announced what the numbers were that they were going to bring it back.
I do hear quite a lot about how Netflix struggles to pay for certain shows, they have to cut certain things and whatever. Mm-hmm. It seems like the situation over there maybe is just spreading too much money over too many shows. I guess what I'm basically saying is quality over quantity, like what Apple does.
I know exactly what you mean. I think rather than them piloting things, in some cases Netflix seems to just commission a season of a show, and it's kind of throw enough mud at the wall and see what sticks attitude when it comes to it. So you'll find that they make one season of a show and they had a bunch of these kind of fantasy based things and they were never going to renew them all. It was just a case of, well, that one worked, so we'll renew that one. What was it? Cursed. The
Curse got cancelled.
Yeah, it got cancelled last week or the week before, which, yeah, I really enjoyed. And that's the difficulty with having that attitude. It's a case of they kind of, I think, going into it, know that not all of these are going to get renewed, but by the fact that they've made one season of it, you're then going to disappoint a bunch of people because they really liked it and it got cancelled. Rather than sort of piloting something and make a more nuanced decision over it, they just go, okay, well, we'll just make a bunch of them and then see which ones survive, you know? And whilst there is some benefit to that because you do then get to see one season of it and there is a whole load more of those kind of fantasy genre shows, it does then end up disappointing a lot more people because some people will love those shows. And if the audience isn't there, I can sort of understand why they don't renew them, but it doesn't have a great look either for Netflix because it does look like you're then cancelling a bunch of shows as well. So over on Dave, they have, well, this is sort of renewal slash pickup because Dave has picked up a thing called Late Night MASH hosted by Nish Kumar. And it's essentially, it's the MASH report, which used to go out on BBC Two, which was a sort of weekly political comedy like The Daily Show, that sort of thing. They cancelled it after four seasons on BBC Two, but Dave have now picked it up and have renamed it Late Night MASH. So it's basically the MASH report, but it's going to be on Dave instead. And that is coming later on this year. In terms of actual pickups, Sky have picked up the Dwayne Johnson series Young Rock, which looks like immense amounts of fun. This is the show that is based on the life of the young Dwayne Johnson, and there are three actors that are playing him at different ages. It has Dwayne Johnson in doing a bit to camera, kind of explaining where this fits into his life, you know, and how these stories connect to him. And they are genuinely based around events that happened in his life. That looks like it's going to be really, really, really fun.
I like Dwayne Johnson, but I don't actually like a lot of stuff that he's been in. He seems like a nice guy and everything, and I enjoyed the first reboot Jumanji film. But a lot of the films that he tends to do tend to be sort of big, dumb, fun sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Like Skyscraper or San Andreas or, you know, those sorts. I know he's just done, Jungle Cruise?
Jungle Cruise, which looks
obviously a bit different to that, and that's got Emily Blunt, so maybe I'll like that. But Black Adam might be quite good, and that's sort of thing. But it's a shame because and Fast and Furious I don't care about anymore, but I just want him to do slightly different things, so but maybe this might be quite good. I don't know,
it looks quite interesting. And bearing in mind with the show, although it's based on his history and he is introing bits, it's a dramatization of those parts of his life because he had this really weird upbringing in Hawaii, so that's what the main sort of story is based around, and it's kind of comedy based around that. So the other thing they picked up up is Mr. Mayor, which is a comedy starring Ted Danson and Holly Hunter. It follows a retired businessman played by Danson who runs for mayor of Los Angeles to prove that he's still got it. Once he wins, he has to figure out what he stands for, gain respect of his biggest critic, played by Holly Hunter, and reconnect with his teenage daughter, all while trying to get anything right for America's second weirdest city. It sounds like it's going to be quite good fun. Ted Danson is great, and Holly Hunter is wonderful as well. So I think it's going to be a really fun series, that, and that's both those are coming to Sky Comedy, both those shows. We've got a couple of early premiere dates as well. Star Trek Lower Decks Season 2 is premiering on Friday the 13th of August on Amazon Prime Video in the UK. That's going out just the day after it goes out in the US. So it's not going to drop as a box set. It's going to go out weekly, and it's going to go out the day after it airs on Paramount Plus. And Hawkeye, the MCU TV series, has got a date as well. 24th of November, that is landing on Disney Plus worldwide. That's a Wednesday that is dropping.
Star Trek Lower Decks, I watched one episode and I never went back to it. But with Hawkeye, that's my most anticipated Marvel show, just because what's been set up for it, and like Kate Bishop and other things I can't spoil from other films recently. So that looks really quite good. They showed a couple of pictures, haven't they, of Hawkeye and Kate, because they showed a new picture as they announced the air date, and that looks quite good. So, but yeah, Star Trek, I just didn't care for Star Trek Lower Decks. It was just a bit sort of, I don't know, I tried to be kind of Rick and Morty-ish and just be kind of weird and crazy.
Well, it's from one of the guys that made Rick and Morty. So, you know,
it just didn't really work. I like Solar Opposites, and I like Rick and Morty. It just, maybe it didn't work for me with Star Trek. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that is the case, but I really enjoyed it. I mean, it is basically Rick and Morty in a Star Trek world, because I mean, it is toned down a bit, because you can't do quite the outlandish stuff that they do in something like Rick and Morty or even Solar Opposites. You can't get away with that under a Star Trek license. So it is toned down a little bit, but it does have that very much that sensibility to it. And I really enjoyed the first season of Lower Decks. It's very fun and very silly, and it is from one of the guys that did Rick and Morty and Solar Opposites. So if you like that sort of humour, I would say it is worth giving a try, particularly if you're a Star Trek fan. Mm-hmm. Moving on to bigger news stories, there is a major shift coming over at Sky as they say goodbye to Sky One after nearly 40 years. They've decided that Sky One will be no more as a channel. They're adding two new channels. One will be called Sky Showcase and one will be called Sky Max. Sky Max is going to be a linear channel and on-demand service. It's the new home of Sky's big blockbuster entertainment. So it's going to have things like Discovery of Witches, Cobra, League of Their Own will be on there. The new Nevermind the Buzzcocks we talked about a few weeks ago, that is going to be on there. Essentially, Sky Max is Sky One under a different brand name. So although they're saying Sky One is going away, the spiritual successor to Sky One is Sky Max, pretty much. That's all it is, really, is rebranding. Sky Showcase is going to be something slightly different. They're calling it a linear-only main event channel. So it sounds like it's not going to have a Sky Showcase channel on their TV. It's just going to be the main sort of broadcast channel. And the idea with that is it's going to curate a selection of shows from across the Sky portfolio. So they are going to premiere some things on there, I think, which will then appear on Sky Max afterwards. It will take stuff from Sky Witness. It will take stuff from Sky Documentary. So the idea is it is literally a showcase channel. It takes stuff off all the other different channels and will run it on Sky Showcase as a premiere thing. Interesting that they're doing that, and the fact that Sky Showcase is actually the thing that is going to take the EPG number of Sky One. So it's going to be on channel 106 for that. And then Sky Max, I think, is going on to 113. They've said that Sky Max is going on to. Not that it massively matters, because I don't think anybody pays that much attention to where they are on the listings particularly. But so that's the idea with Sky Showcase, is they're going to use it as a way of premiering stuff first, I think, is the idea, that it will go out on there, but it's stuff that will go on to the other channels as well. The other thing they've said is Sky Comedy comedy is going to be beefed up a little bit. So stuff that ran on Sky One, like Code 404 and Hitmen, the Sky original comedies, all that main comedy stuff is going to be moved across onto Sky Comedy directly, along with the stuff that it's already running. So things like Miracle Workers and Pen 15 and The Office US and all that sort of stuff that they're already running. They're going to move all the comedy that was on the Sky One channel is going to move across directly onto Sky Comedy as well. So they've shifted a bunch of shows around. That's pretty much it. I mean, what they did say is Sky Showcase is going to launch things like Wolf, which is a new Sky original drama that will go out on Sky Showcase first. But then when you actually look at where they're talking about it running regularly, it will run regularly on Sky Max. So it's almost like a sort of watch it here early, and then the regular series will go out on Sky Max, if that sort of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also saying Young Rock will go out on there first, and SWAT will go out on there first, and a few other things as well. So whether that means they'll air the first episode of season on there, and then the rest of it will run on Sky Max, or whether they'll run the whole thing on there, and then it will run a few days later on Sky Max, I don't know exactly how that's going to work. We'll have to see.
Funny, because I read through the post that you put up for this, and as soon as I got to Sky Max, I immediately just thought of HBO Max. Plus, there's a kind of HBO Sky relationship-ish thing there, but just not with HBO Max necessarily. I don't think this is going to make that much difference. I don't get the whole Sky Showcase and then Sky Max. It's like, okay, but if those two channels are going to be on the same platform anyway, it almost feels like that's trying to be some sort of, hey, this channel's got it exclusive first, but then if you've got access to one channel, you've kind of got access to both, haven't you?
Yeah, but what they are saying with Sky Showcase is it's linear only. So I don't think Sky Showcase will be on Now TV. I think Sky Max will be, but Sky Showcase won't. So if you are a Sky subscriber rather than a Now TV subscriber, you may get to see the episode a few days early on Sky Showcase.
Okay.
I think maybe that's the reason for doing it that way. Because, I mean, I'm with you in that if you have access to both, it makes no difference. So for a Sky customer, all it means is you might get to see it a little bit early. And I think it's a way of trying to pull people off maybe Now TV and onto Sky, possibly. I think is what they may be trying to do with that.
It's a strange thing to do on your own platform.
Well, yeah, given that they own both, but the problem is I think they're seeing numbers of people go to Now TV from Sky, because let's be honest, Sky is really expensive and Now TV isn't.
It's a lot more expensive than Now
exactly
TV.
And they both have exactly the same content pretty much, so I think it's a way of giving a little bit back to the Sky customers that the Now TV customers won't have, or the Now customers won't have. So I think that's possibly what they're trying to do with that. But
yeah, they've been chopping and changing things a little bit. Like, they did the whole Sky Comedy and documentaries. And when they made those changes before, that just felt like rebranding. This just feels like doing some other type of rebranding.
Well, it is sort of just trying to tidy things up. I think the problem is that it was Sky One, and then they had Sky Two and Sky Three, and they kind of got rid of Sky Two and Sky Three, and you're just left with Sky One. So when you haven't got like 2, 3, 4 following it, it sort of makes sense maybe to rebrand that Sky Max as a separate thing. There's no other channels like going, you know, Sky Witness is still there, Sky Documentary, Sky Crime, Sky Nature, Sky Comedy, Sky History, you know, everything else is staying. What we don't know is exactly what's happening to things like Pick, which is also then, because they don't mention that, I think we maybe you'll lose Pick TV possibly, but we don't know.
Is that used for anything now?
Not really. There was other than kind of catch up things, and I think it's a free to air channel. I could be wrong about that, but I think it's a free to air channel. So
I suppose my ultimate question is, how many channels does one company need?
Well,
I mean, I get if you've got like Sky Nature and Comedy and Documentaries, those are different categories, but when you've got like Sky One and you've got all these other kind of channels, or now you've got like Showcase and Max and whatever.
I think part of this is them doing that. They've only really got the two. They've got Sky Showcase, which is purely going to be Sky, and then you've got Sky Match, which is basically what Sky One was. So that's really the only change. The only thing really is the fact that they're adding Sky Showcase, which is just going to be a Sky channel, as far as I can tell.
Right.
So that's really the sort of major shift. And then with all the others, they are are very specific. I mean, you know, Sky Witness is the crime stuff. Sky Documentaries is documentaries. Then, then you've got Sky Crime, but that's kind of true crime. Comedy, history, kids. So they have sort of, I think, split it into categories. They really only have Sky Max, which is a general entertainment channel. And then...
Do you think there will be anybody that sees a new channel, Sky Max, and associates it with HBO Max?
Yes, I've had that confusion already, and I've had that conversation with somebody on the Facebook page of like, well, is this going to be... Yeah, I do get that. As far as we're aware, they haven't done a deal to get all the HBO Max stuff, unfortunately. That would be great if they do that, but they haven't. I mean, one thing they do mention on Sky Max's launch is the fact that it will have the return of Nevermind the Buzzcocks, Russell Howard Hour will be back, and DC Superheroes. And that's as vague as they make it. So I don't know whether that's just the existing shows that they have, or whether that means that they have actually picked up Superman and Lois and they're not prepared to announce it yet, whether it means that they're getting some of the other DC superhero stuff, because HBO Max has a bunch of other things. I don't know. But they do specifically mention the DC superheroes in there.
Because you've got Naomi coming out, you've got the Green Lantern series, and there's probably some others as well.
Yeah, there's supposed to be a Justice League Dark series.
Oh, yeah, is that as well?
I mean, technically there is Titans and Stargirl and that sort of stuff. Mm. But
those have homes in other places, I suppose.
Yeah, so yeah.
It's crazy how spread out the DC shows are in this country.
Yes, it's somewhat annoying.
Yeah.
So that's the state of that. I think September they said they're going to launch those. So we'll see as we get kind of closer to it exactly what goes where and, you know, how that's going to run. The other change coming on Sky is they announced that the Peacock streaming service, which is the NBC Universal streaming service, is going to be launching in the UK. Now, I've learned a bit more about what runs on Peacock in the US, and I'm almost positive it is not going to be an exact copy of the US version, because first of all, it can't be, because some of the shows have already been sold to other networks, like Stars Play in the UK has a couple of the shows, like Dr. Death is one of the Peacock series in the US, and that's coming to Stars Play in the UK. I mean, it's weird that that got sold when they must have known that this was somewhere in the works of them launching this, unless it was a very, very quick sort of woke up one morning and decided to do this deal, which seems weird. So I don't know, unless it's the fact that maybe it was made by an outside studio when they didn't have the rights to sell it internationally. I don't know, but it seems a little odd that one of their Peacock originals has been sold somewhere else. There's not that much in terms of original content on Peacock at the moment. In terms of original shows that aren't airing anywhere else right now, you've got Girls Five Ever, which is a sort of musical dramedy about an aging girl band. You've got Rutherford Falls, which is a sitcom series. It's Michael Schur. He's one of the people that were involved in creating that. So I think that probably would go down quite well. There's the Punky Brewster revival. There's the Saved by the Bell revival. The two dramas that they have, the original dramas, as I say, Dr. Death has already been sold to Stars Play, and we've already had Brave New World because they bought that last year. So that's coming over. There's some docuseries and stuff. There's some reality TV rubbish. There's AP Bio, technically, is a series which runs on Peacock. A whole bunch of the stuff is actually things which are already Sky shows. So things like Intelligence and Save Me and Hitmen and Intergalactic, they all run on Peacock in the US. But, I mean, they're already Sky shows. So a whole bunch of their original stuff is stuff that we already have. They have got a bunch of interesting original programming coming. So there's the Bel Air series, which is that sort of dramatized version of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, which looks really interesting. There's that coming. There's the new Battlestar Galactica series, which is from the guy that did Mr. Robot, is the person behind that, and it's a continuation of the Battlestar Galactica reboot, or set in that sort of same world, I think.
Forgot they announced that, yeah.
Yeah, so there's that coming. There's Vampire Academy, which is another vampire show from the person that did The Vampire Diaries, although it's completely completely different universe. It's not, they're not connected in any way. She's doing another vampire show. There's the new version of Queer as Folk that's coming on there. There's that Joe Exotic dramatization thing that they've been doing as well. Dan Brown's Lost Symbol, which is the Dan Brown series that we talked about a number of weeks ago. So there's all that sort of stuff that's coming. There's a TED TV series they talked about. So they have got quite a lot of stuff which is in development and due to drop. Well, some of that we don't know when. Some of it's due to drop later this year. So, I mean, mm-hmm. there is some interesting stuff coming up. And I think maybe that's what pushed them to launch it now. And maybe it's a case of things like Bel-Air maybe up and running by the time they eventually launch it over here. But we don't know at the moment.
Maybe this will just be good for like future use if they announce some exciting stuff. I mean, you got the Battlestar thing, which kind of sticks out the most there.
Yeah.
Did you say that was a Sam Raimi, not Sam Raimi, the guy behind Mr. Robot?
Yes.
Sam Esmail.
Sam Esmail developing
that. Got the wrong
Sam. Yeah.
that's probably the thing that sticks out as the most exciting from what you just mentioned.
Yeah. The Bel-Air series I'm quite interested in, and maybe Vampire Academy. I don't know.
Oh yeah, that's the Will Smith thing, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. That's the Will Smith thing. So I think that's, and Lost Symbol I think looks interesting as well. So I mean, there is some interesting stuff coming up. It's just they've been a little behind everybody else getting that stuff up and running. Outside of the original things, we don't know what else is going to be on there, because like Peacock in the US I think runs WWE, and they also act as a catch-up service for some of the other shows. And I don't know whether it is going to be a case of, say, the NBC shows like the Chicago series, maybe rather than them only being on limited catch-up on Sky, so, you know, them only being there for a month or so and then disappearing, maybe you'll get full box sets land on Peacock and stay there permanently. That may be what they end up doing.
Right, of like old NBC shows.
Yeah, of older NBC shows. Maybe you'll get some of that. So, I mean, you know, it's possible that Good Place, for example, was an old NBC show. Maybe you'll get that land on there as a box set. But I can't guarantee any of that because we don't know right now.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Things that they do mention is a really odd mix, because it's things like The Office US, Rutherford Falls, as I mentioned, which is a new show, Saved by the Bell, which is the reboot thing. They mentioned The Equalizer, which is already coming to Sky Witness or Sky One. Young Rock, which we've already mentioned, is coming to Sky Comedy. Kardashian's Suits, they mentioned on there as well. So apparently that's going to come on there as a box set. And Downton Abbey, weirdly, they mentioned on there. So yeah, I don't know. They're talking about it as being sort of Peacock Originals plus NBC Universal's iconic libraries of series and movies. So there will be a bunch of NBC Universal or Universal movies and NBC series on there. As to exactly what they are, we don't know right now. There's some interesting things going on with the changes in the UK. And I mean, one of the other things as well, which has been talked about in the US, is a potential joining of NBC and CBS. And there's lots of stories floating around about a possible merger of those two. Now, they've been slightly taken out of context, because a direct merger of NBC and CBS currently is not possible, because they are two of the major US networks and they are simply not allowed to have one company own both of those major networks. That just wouldn't be allowed. So it's sort of the same reason why Fox is a separate channel, despite the fact that Disney bought all the Fox assets. When that Fox-Disney merger went through, Fox had to be spun off as its own thing because Disney already had ABC. So you wouldn't be allowed to merge those channels. So even if Viacom CBS and NBC Universal did merge as one parent company, they would have to spin off one of the broadcast networks as its own thing. So either CBS would have to be an entirely separate business, or NBC, the channel, would have to be an entirely separate business. So I don't see that happening. But one of the things they have been talking about is Peacock and Paramount Plus are struggling to compete against Disney Plus and HBO Max.
One
thing they could do is merge those two streaming services into one thing. Uh-huh. And that would give you a repository of all the Peacock original content, all the Paramount original content. So, you know, all the Star Treks and all that sort of stuff, all in one place. Plus, you'd be able to use it in the US as a catch-up service for both. So that would be interesting if they do end up doing that. And bear in mind, this is all rumor and chatter, and there is no guarantee that any of this is going to happen. But there has been a lot of talk about, there are apparently talks going on behind the scenes about them maybe merging the streaming services into one place, because that is something they could do and maybe would help them. And I'd just be interested, now we've got Peacock over here, if that happens, what that would do, whether we'd then suddenly get this flux of CBS or Paramount Plus stuff coming across as well.
Yeah, it kind of ties into a little bit, not like exactly, but there's certain elements of it, of what I talked about 6 months to a year ago, maybe, of like a TV crash, hypothetically, of what that would mean basically is there's just too much TV, there's too many streaming services, which means too much money for like consumers to pay out for. And given that we've already got things like you can subscribe to, I think it's what, ESPN, Hulu, and Disney Plus in the US, which makes sense, obviously, because of those companies. But given that you've just said about the merger or potential merger between these two, that makes sense as well. Because, I mean, it's a lot better in the UK for like pricing of television, basically, than it is in the US. It's far more expensive. There's more things to subscribe to, I feel like, in the US than there is in the UK. Especially if you just look at something like Disney Plus, where we're starting to get some of the Hulu and some of the FX shows, which means we just subscribe to Disney Plus for most of that stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously the originals and all
that. If you're wondering why, even though it's a Hulu original series and it goes out on Disney Plus on Star over here, if there is a show like that, one of the reasons that they don't air it next day on Disney Plus is because what they don't want is somebody in the US who has a Disney Plus subscription turning on a VPN and getting the UK feed, which suddenly gives them Star, which means that if they put it on like the day after it went out on Hulu, it means they could cancel their Hulu subscription and just use an international.
Yeah.
That's the reason why Hulu shows don't go out next day on Star in the UK. Because if they did that, you'd have an issue where if you're in the US and you're slightly technically savvy, you'd just turn on a VPN and take the international feed instead, and you get Star.
It'd be a lot cheaper.
Yeah, because it would be a lot cheaper. So it's a way of really screwing over the Americans and forcing them to pay for two feeds. Although I do believe they do deals on if you have Disney Plus and if you have Hulu together. I think there is some sort of deal to get all the services in one go. Because I think you can get ESPN for like a quid or something, or a dollar or something extra on top.
Yeah, they're kind of tied together a little bit, aren't they? Very interesting stuff. Very interesting.
We'll keep an eye on that. And when we know a bit more about exactly what is going to be on Peacock, we'll let you know. But at the moment, they've just said it's coming. It's going to be at no extra cost. It'll be on Sky. It'll be on Now TV or Now. And it won't cost anything. So we'll see what ends up actually landing on there.
Does anybody call it Now, or does everybody still call it Now TV?
I think everybody still calls it Now TV, in all honesty. But yes, technically it is called the Now streaming service. And lastly, some big news dropped about Doctor Who, but I mean, it's been the worst kept rumour for months, but Jodie Whittaker and Chris Chibnall are both leaving in 2022. So that is the star and the showrunner have said that they will be leaving in 2022. This has been rumoured for months and months and months, but they did finally come out and confirm that that is the case. They will end their run with a 6-part event serial, which will air in autumn 2021, along with 2 specials, which will air in 2022, and an additional final feature length adventure for the 13th Doctor, which means that there'll be 3 specials in 2022. So 3 specials in 2022, 6 episodes that are airing in autumn this year. And that unique thing about the 6 episodes that are airing this year will be the fact that it is one continuous story, which, I mean, they're saying, oh, this is new and unique. In actual fact, if you go back and look at the original Doctor Who series, that's what they did. The original Doctor Who show, they were half hour episodes, whereas these are going to be sort of 45 minutes, hour longs. But the original series were like half hour episodes, which were a continuing story and ran for 6 episodes or something. So it's sort of going back to what the show originally was. And it's going to be not just sort of individual Monster of the Week things with an underlying story. It is literally going to be a story which is a continuing thing for 6 episodes, which I think is a great way of doing it. I think it suits Chris Chibnall down to the ground, because I mean, this is the guy that brought us things like Broadchurch, and he's exactly exactly the sort of thing that he really should be writing. So I think that's great. And I will be very sad to see Jodie Whittaker go, because I think she's been brilliant in the role. I think she's been different. And, you know, of course, first female doctor. So we'll see which way that it jumps afterwards. But I mean, went through the usual sort of regeneration loop of, I don't like this doctor, to actually this person's okay, to this person's brilliant, nobody could ever replace them. And then that starts all over again when a new doctor gets cast. So that's just the sort of Doctor Who fan loop of every time a regeneration happens. But she was actually voted second most popular doctor of all time, sitting just behind, of course, David Tennant, on a fan vote on Radio Times of like 50,000 fans. So she has been very popular. I think she suffered in the first season of Chibnall, really didn't quite grasp what he was doing. And the stories were, there were some great stories in that run, but there were also some terrible ones. And there was no overarching story. And it was very woolly that first season. I think it vastly improved for the second season. So this will now be her third season. A lot of people saying, oh, she didn't last very long. Actually, you look at, I don't know about the episode count, but the length of time she's been there is exactly the same as Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi. So in terms of the time period, she's been there for as long, but it may be not quite as many episodes as some of the others.
Yeah, I really like Jodie as a doctor. I think she did a really good job. I do feel like her doctor was held back by writing choices, as you said, and just like some of the stories that were kind of told. I mean, we've still got to figure out, like, okay, who's going to be the next, if you talk about big British roles, like who's going to be the next James Bond, because the upcoming one's going to be Daniel's last one. I think for either of those, I'd really like to see Idris Elba involved. I think he'd make a really good James Bond or a doctor or something, but yeah. I don't think that's probably going to happen, unfortunately.
No, I think Idris Elba, I can't see him stepping into something like Doctor Who. There's been a lot of rumours floating around as to who potentially might take up the role. I mean, there's been names like Ollie Alexander, who of course was the lead in It's a Sin, the Russell T Davies thing, and he's the lead singer of Years and Years as well. Yeah, and who's would be a really interesting role. I think he may be a little bit young for the part, but yeah, I think that would be really interesting.
Age into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've just looked up a sort of what are the bookies giving odds on. Michael Sheen is one of the ones that the sort of 6-4 favourite at William Hill, apparently, at the moment. Michaela Cole is another name that's been kicking around. Richard Ayoade, which I don't see at all.
No. Maybe as a companion or something.
Yes, I think Richard could do a great job as a companion. I think he's a little too strange as the Doctor, if that's like fair enough.
I get you.
I like him a lot, but and it would be interesting, but I don't know whether he's got the range of acting that you would necessarily need for it. I think as a companion he could be great, but yes, I'm not entirely convinced. Ollie would be interesting. Michaela Cole would be very interesting, and I mean, I'd watch Michael Sheen in anything, so I mean, that would be fantastic. I don't necessarily see Michael Sheen doing it. I think it's a grueling schedule, and I mean, I would love it, but I'm not entirely sure that he'd want to commit to it. So we'll see. It's somebody that, you know, the bookies have completely missed until the very last minute. So this far out, a lot of the names floating around end up not being people that get the role. So we'll see.
I was never into the Peter Capaldi era.
I like Peter a lot. I thought he was a really interesting choice for it. Again, suffered a little bit with some of the writing, but still, I liked him as a doctor very much.
In terms of James Bond as well, Henry Cavill would be great. So,
well, yes, Henry Cavill. Sam Heughan, I think, has had his name thrown around a bit from Outlander, who also would be wonderful. So,
okay, cool.
That's for Bond, not for Doctor Who.
Right.
But so we'll see. But yes, we will be getting a new Doctor probably announced at some point, I would think, either later this year or next year. We will hear that. We don't know yet who's taking over as showrunner either, which of course is the other major thing. So we'll see who lands that gig as well, because that's quite important.
Give it to Vince Gilligan.
Yeah, I'll be really interested. So that's all the news for this week. Let's move on to some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week. We have The Good Wife Season 2 lands on Alibi on the 5th of August at 11 p.m. That, of course, has already run in the UK, but they're rerunning it on Alibi. So that's The Good Wife. That's back for its second season on Alibi, if you're working through that from the beginning. Cruel Summer, which is a new show coming to Amazon Prime. That's on the 6th of August. That is a small Texas town where a beautiful, popular teen is abducted and seemingly unrelated girl goes from being a sweet, awkward outlier to the most popular girl in town, by 95 the most despised person in America. So that sounds like it could be an interesting crime dramery thing, I think, of sort of abducted teens and stuff. But Cruel Summer, that's called, that's on the 6th of August on Amazon Prime, that is landing. Pose Season 3 and the final season of Pose, that is returning on BBC Two on the 8th of August at 10 p.m. That lands. Ghosts Season 3, which is the highly critically acclaimed comedy, that is returning on BBC One on the 9th of August at 8:30. That lands, which is, of course, about a couple who inherit a house that is inhabited by very needy ghosts. I haven't actually managed to catch any of that, and I really need to go on to iPlayer and watch it, but that's Ghosts Season 3.
I don't think I've heard of that before.
Yeah, it flew very much under the radar for the first couple of seasons, but I really want to go and watch it, and I just keep forgetting it's there. But presumably the first couple of seasons are on, so need to go and watch those. But that's Ghost Season 3 on the 9th of August at 8:30. And then Younger Season 7 and the final season of that lands 9th of August at 11 p.m. That is coming to Comedy Central. That's the 7th and final season of that, 9th of August at 11 p.m. mm-hmm. on Comedy Central. That is all the stuff coming up next week. If they want to find more of your stuff, where can they find you?
Find me on entertainmenttalk.org. Currently doing Ted Lasso, has come back for its second season. Monsters at Work, which has been fun. All the Walking Dead shows are going to have come back sooner or later.
Yes.
I've been doing a bunch of other reviews and things like that. And of course, football's back in about 2 weeks, I think. Man United have actually brought some players, which is good. players that we actually wanted as well. So that's very good. I'll need to do a big preview podcast about that to discuss hopefully some different things happening. You can find all that on entertainmenttalk.org. I also do stream on Twitch now and again. I'm going to try and focus on Psychonauts for the future streams and see how that goes. You can find me on Twitch, eTalkUK, and if you want to find the streams later, they should be on YouTube eventually. That's Entertainment Talk Players on there.
Excellent. Go and check Matt out over on there. Bex, of course, you can go and find on Twitch, which is twitch.tv/TristaBytes. You can go and find her over on there doing lots of streams, raising money for charity and just general fun and silliness and retro gaming and all that sort of stuff. So that's twitch.tv/TristaBytes. That's B-Y-T-E-S. Go and check Bets out over on there. Daryl, you can find at HollywoodNorthNews.net for all the TV series you love shot in Canada. He covers all that over on there. For us, you can go to the website at geektown.co.uk. Throughout the week, can see all the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post, find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/Geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/Geektown, and on Instagram at Geektown UK. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.